Transform your life today. Welcome to Super Coach with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. We are going to be talking about infinite potential and infinite possibilities today. And the numbers to call to talk to me about your potential, your possibilities, and whatever this brings up for you are 866-254-1579. That's toll free in the United States and Canada, 866-254-1579. Or from outside the U.S., you can reach the show by dialing 001-760-918-4300. And as always, I'm going to set the table before I go to the phones, but I just need to brag. I don't do it that often, but I've got a new website. If you go to michaelneal.org, you will see my new website. It just went live on Monday, and it comes with a new blog at Caffeine for the Soul, which there will be a separate site for that, but for now you can find that at the Caffeine for the Soul section of michaelneal.org. And also you'll see a lot of stuff about my new book, The Space Within, which comes out on May 3rd, and it's already the hot new book. It was this morning number 2 in self-help and number 4 in mind, body, spirit as the one to watch. So you can find out more about that and pre-order that, and we'll be, as we get closer to the actual launch, we'll be sharing lots of gifts for those of you who've purchased a copy. You'll automatically, if you just let us know you bought one, there'll be a space on the site for that. So that was my share. Very excited about that. Let's talk about infinite potential and infinite possibilities. One of the things when we were creating the new site is we were talking about, well, what's the essence of the inside out understanding? What's the essence of what I talk about on the show each week? What's the essence of what I'm pointing people towards in the conversations that we have when you phone in and we talk about your life and we talk about your circumstances and we talk about what you can do to unleash more of yourself into the world, tap into more of your creativity, your creative genius, to tap into more of your potential. And the phrase that we came to was, wake up to the infinite creative potential. And in The Space Within, I talk a lot about this infinite creative potential, that it is at the core of who we all are. We are the potential for anything. Manifest as something. You could say we are the potential for anyone, manifest as someone. And it's not a one and done. It's not like you chose once and that's what you're stuck with. Well, I guess I'm going to have to live out this lifetime as that guy from Philadelphia. I'm not from Philadelphia, but Vicky from Philadelphia is going to be our first caller. And I just saw her name come up on my screen when I was saying that. But, you know, I guess I'm just this person. I guess I'm just who I am. And this is my lot in life. What you have created with your one and only life up until this moment in time is just what you've created with your one and only life up until this moment in time. In any moment, we can go back to the infinite creative potential. In any moment, we can go back to the well. In any moment, we can go back to what the French painter Michel Cassou called point zero, the blank canvas, the not yet created, the fertile void out of which all things come, the nothingness out of which the isness emerges, that together make up the allness. And in that moment, we're back in that space of infinite potential. And we're back to a place where there are infinite possibilities for what could come through us next. And a really simple way of thinking about this is, you don't know what you're going to be thinking 5 minutes from now. Now, you might think you know, and you might. Like, if you wrote down on a piece of paper right now, in 5 minutes, I will be thinking, ha, I proved Michael wrong. I did know what I was going to be thinking in 5 minutes. You might be able to pull it off. But the first 5 minutes that you forget to plan for, You don't know what you're going to be thinking 5 minutes from now. You don't know what you're going to be thinking 30 seconds from now. That is the infinite potential in action. Now, the infinite potential isn't benign, right? It's not that you will automatically be thinking something beautiful 30 seconds from now or 5 minutes from now. But the beauty of it is that if you don't like what you're thinking 30 seconds from now, you can go back to the well and think something else. If you don't like what you're thinking 5 minutes from now, you can go back to the well and think something else. And in fact, there is no point at which you lose the ability to go back to the well. There is no point at which you suddenly become unable to start again, to have a fresh start, to begin at the beginning, to begin the journey of 1,000 miles with a single step. And we're not used to living like that. For a lot of us, we are not comfortable living like that. We want to know where we're headed. We want our vision. We want our goals. We want our direction. We want. But a lot of that is only because we don't know what's on offer. So I sometimes use the analogy of going to a restaurant, looking at the menu. There's nothing here I really want, but I guess the grilled cheese with tomato soup sounds better than the burger with jalapenos. So you order the grilled cheese sandwich. You know, what you really fancied was like a gorgeous steak or nut cutlet if you're vegetarian. But, you know, you see somebody else and they're eating this gorgeous steak, and you see somebody else with this prime nut cutlet, and you're like, wait, how did they get that? And then you realize, oh, I was looking at page one of 1,000-page menu because that's the page I'm used to looking at. That's the only page we had in my house, was page one. We didn't know it was 1,000-page menu. We didn't know that the chef will actually cook up pretty much anything given the ingredients that they've got. And so when we get too caught up in trying to decide what we want in our lives, we don't see that we're cutting off from 350 degrees of a 360-degree potential. We don't see that we're settling for the best we can imagine instead of opening up to something that is unimaginably perfect for us. We take the thing that we think will be most satisfying or least unsatisfying because we don't know that just by going back to that space of infinite potential, just by returning to that space of infinite possibility, something more beautiful than you can imagine is waiting for you. Now, it can go the other way. You can get caught up in going, oh, I'm not going to do anything until it's perfect. And that's not what I'm pointing to. I'm just pointing to the fact that a lot of us set goals and set a direction and set targets either because we think we're supposed to, because we think it's the best of what's on offer, or because we're really uncomfortable not knowing what's going to happen next. But when you realize you never know what's going to happen next, then you also realize that you may as well get comfortable with that. Get comfortable hanging out in the space of infinite creative potential. And get comfortable allowing something new to come through from the world of infinite possibilities. Numbers to call, 866-254-1579, toll free in the United States and Canada. Outside the U.S., dial 001-760-918-4300. And we're going to begin today in Philadelphia with Vicki. Vicki, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Hi, how are you?
I'm well, actually. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I had spoken to your friend Robert Holden a couple of weeks ago on his show, and he said that you would be a very good person for me to connect with. So I picked up your book. In fact, I just received it a couple of days ago. Yeah. I have a lot of anxiety in my life, always have been that kind of person. Mm-hmm. But what I'm looking to do, I'm changing my life from the inside out, let's say.
Okay.
And with a healthy journey as far as eating and all that. And I'm trying to get my mind to catch up with all the progress that I've made. So I'm looking for a direction to find, like, that peace in my life.
Okay, so what is for you the connection between a direction and peace?
I guess to be happy, to be, is that kind of what you're...
Well, I'll tell you why I ask.
Okay.
Because one of the things that I discovered kind of late on in some ways about life, but boy, was it nice to know, is we're made well. Like, we're made peaceful. We're made happy. We're born happy. And what happens is, we start getting ideas about what it takes to be happy. Happiness starts looking like an achievement, an accomplishment, and a pursuit instead of a state of mind. And in fact, not just a state of mind, but if you go beyond happiness, which, you know, I'll call happiness the opposite of sadness, there is a deeper peace inside which we can be happy or sad, and it's fine.
Okay.
Now, that is our nature. That is home base. That's actually what we return to, where we return to when we're not all caught up in our ideas of what we have to do in order to be happy. So the whole idea of I'll be happy when is just mythological.
Mm-hmm.
And the irony of it is that the very things we think we need to get to in order to be happy take us away from our natural state of well-being.
Right.
So for me, direction and happiness, if the only connection I can make between direction and happiness is that if I look within as opposed to without, if I look to my nature instead of to what I might create in my life, if I look to where happiness actually is and comes from, as opposed to where everyone tells me it comes from, which is more, better, prettier, whatever, then I'm probably going to find it because that's where it is. Now, once I found it, as I'm finding it, as I'm resting in it more and more, I can create all sorts of stuff in the world. But it's so much easier to create because I'm not trying to create it in order to be happy.
Okay.
So there's an expression that I had in my first book, and you can have what you want, that has the weird distinction of being the one phrase that Joe Vitale, the author, said, I wish I wrote that, which was, if you're doing things in order to be happy, you're doing them in the wrong order.
Okay.
Happiness leads to success a heck of a lot more often than success leads to happiness.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because when we are resting in our true nature, in our well-being, it's a lot easier to create stuff from that place.
Wow.
So what are you hearing there? What's behind the wow?
Just hearing it, you know, because my mind has so many, most times, negative thoughts, and which causes fears and things. So, you know, to just hear you say that, you know, and to be present and to be happy with the now, maybe, is kind of what you're getting to, right?
Well, yeah, because now's actually where you are.
Right.
And it turns out that now has all these attributes that we think are then. Here has all these things that we think are there.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we start hanging out now and here, we suddenly find, oh, I've already got that. I'm already okay. I already have a nice feeling that if I sit in it, actually, at times can become almost rapturous.
Which is what I never do.
Right.
I never take that time to enjoy even that 5 seconds where I didn't feel anxious or something went right or.
Well, and that's the comedy of us, right? Us humans, mm-hmm. right? Is we somehow think if I took 1 minute to let myself just kind of enjoy the moment,
right.
I'm going to wind up doing nothing with my life and I'll be homeless and fat. And I mean, it's like this weird logic that says, you know, I don't want to get in my car. Why don't you want to get in your car? Because I'm scared of heights. What do you
right.
mean? Well, if I get in my car, I might wind up driving towards the Grand Canyon. And if I get to the Grand Canyon, I might feel compelled to go to the edge and I'm really scared of heights. So I'm not going to get in my car.
Right.
It doesn't work that way. We're a lot healthier and mm-hmm. a lot simpler than we think we are.
Right. We complicate it.
Yeah. So what would that be like to just kind of hang out for a week?
Wow. Deep breath I just took.
Yeah.
I think it would, I think it would be nice.
Well, that's your homework, though.
Soothing.
That's your homework. And if you're up for it, if you go to on Facebook, you can go to facebook.com/MNeil and mm-hmm. You'll find the radio show description. And I'd love you to share whatever experiences you have under there.
Okay.
That would be very cool. Well, thank you for phoning in, Vicki.
Thank you for your guidance.
All right.
That's what this is. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. You know, it is the great, is it the great irony or is it just one of the many ironies? But it is, I think, probably the great irony of the human condition is that we spend so much of our lives striving to find outside ourselves what we already have within. And consequently, sometimes we go to the other extreme. And we cut off completely from the outside because we're worried that we're going to lose that happiness, that well-being that we find in the moment. And the irony is you can't. It's you. You know, I told the story in, I think it's in the Inside Out Revolution, of not long after it dawned on me. And I mean, it dawned on me with like a sledgehammer. It dawned on me sounds gradual. I just all of a sudden saw, oh my gosh, well-being is our nature. It's not an achievement. It's not an accomplishment. It's who you are. It's who I am. And then a guy came to me and he wanted to be happy. And, you know, he'd lost a family member and he was very upset. And he kind of said to me, don't I deserve to be happy? Wouldn't it be okay for me to be happy too? And I felt terrible because I burst out laughing. And I'll read it to you. It's called On Having a Nose. So shortly after I had this insight, and that's the insight that I just shared, a potential client named Richard came to my office and asked me if I could help him. I see people all around me who are happy, and it seems so unfair, he began. I'm not a bad person. I always try to do my best. Don't I deserve a bit of happiness in my life, too? To my dismay, I felt myself starting to crack up. I tried to stifle the laughter because I knew it was horribly inappropriate, but I wound up kind of snorting instead. Richard briefly took offense, but I caught my breath, regained my bearings, and as gently as I could, pointed out the essential humor in his request. It was as though someone had come to me saying, "Can you help me? I see people all around me with noses, and it seems so unfair. I'm not a bad person. Don't I deserve to have a nose on my face, too?" As we spoke further, Richard and I explored some of the other things he thought he needed to practice in order to have. "I'd like to open my heart more," he said. "Is there something I could do to get better at opening my heart?" At that moment, my then 5-year-old daughter Maisie ran into my office, asking whether she should go outside to catch some fairies. I said yes. After all, I'm not an ogre, and then returned to my conversation with Richard. "Do you think Maisie needs to practice keeping her heart open?" I asked him. "Well, no, but she's just a child. She hasn't learned to close her heart yet." We left those words sitting in the silence for some moments, which I finally broke with this quote from Arnold Payton in his book Money. We don't create abundance. Abundance is always present. We create limitation. And that's all I'm talking about here. We don't have to go out and create happiness. Happiness is always present. We take ourselves away from it. We don't have to go out and create contentment or peace of mind. Contentment and peace of mind are your natural state. But we can think ourselves in and out of them all day long. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go out to Salt Lake City and let's talk with Mary. Mary, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Well, hello. My name's Mary, and I had what I've come to coin as my near love experience. I couldn't call it a death. And since that time, I've really struggled with being present, being in these structures, and I've also had my whole belief system pulled out from underneath me. And I was just listening to your show about, you know, being conscious in the now and here, that we, you know, where our focus is what we, you know, ultimately put our attention on.
Yeah.
Is, you know, what our surroundings are and what's going on. And that's where my difficulty is coming in right now.
So I'm not sure I quite understand. So here's what I heard, and then you guide me a little bit. You had what most people would call a near-death experience, and for you, I'm guessing that it was kind of beautiful, so you're calling it a near-love experience.
Correct.
And it sounds like, and I might be totally making this up, Mary, so just correct me, okay? But it sounds like you kind of came back down to earth with a bump. And that beautiful feeling that was part of that near-death, near-love experience, it now everything else feels a little bit black and white because of the vibrancy of the color of that.
Beautifully said, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And my whole belief system, I was an elementary school teacher for 23 years, and I left that. I, you know, because of what I know and see now, it just, everything seems so trivial.
Mm-hmm.
And my whole belief system about, you know, the dogmas of religion even have all changed. And I feel like I'm just so much on the outside looking in and that I'm not a part of things.
Yeah, you know, there's a part of me, Mary, and I know it's not helpful, that just wants to go, oh, bummer. and the reason that I say that is because because it's actually ancient spiritual teaching. Just kind of said like a California dude, because you know, even in thousands of years before Christ, when the Zen teachings were first being imparted, there was a saying, better never to begin, but once begun, better to finish.
Right.
And what it was pointing to is there's a certain comfort in being asleep.
Yeah.
And there is a certain ease in the dream. If your dream's not too bad, it's not. It's kind of comfortable dreaming.
Yeah.
And when you start to wake up, it can get ugly quick.
Yeah.
But as you wake up more and more, you get to a point where you wouldn't go back into the Matrix for all the steak dinners that they could offer you.
Yes, touche. I mean, there's no way of going back into it.
No, and that's kind of the other thing. It's like once begun, best finished. Right, you're in. You may as well keep going. And so here's some things that are helpful. I was talking to somebody this morning, and they were actually telling me about there's been a backlash against mindfulness practice because what they're finding is happening is people are waking up and they're becoming depressed and they're becoming kind of nihilistic and they're seeing through the illusion of this game that we've created that we call life. And the Buddhists are kind of laughing to themselves going, well, yeah, that's why when we do mindfulness, it's part of this epic teaching involved with meditation and practice and understanding of what's going on. Well, let me give you the non-Buddhist shortcut that's going to help. Would that be useful?
Oh, anything, you bet.
Okay. We live in the experience of thought in the moment. That's how the human experience works. Mm-hmm. Thought in the moment, projected onto the screen of consciousness, filtered back through the five senses, and that's what we call life. Now,
that's what most do, correct?
Right. Now, when you wake up to the movie theater, at first, the movies lose some of their charm. You can see the actors acting. You can see the set direction. You can see the costumes. You can see the props. Now, there are two ways to go. There is the trying to fall back asleep, trying to forget that it's a movie. Or there's something gorgeous that happens that people who really love film and work in film, and I work with people. I was actually just at a first screening of a new movie one of my clients has made that's going to be absolutely amazing. I can't talk about it in detail other than to say when I can, you're going to love it. Mm-hmm. But what was neat is it was a room full of industry people. It was a room full of people who make movies for a living. And by about halfway through the film, all of us were just totally forgot we were in a movie theater. We were totally lost in the film. But then when the film was over, we were able to talk about it. We were able to discuss it. We were able to learn from it. And that's what starts to happen. It's not that you lose the ability to just experience your experiences. It's that they're all the richer for seeing how they're made up. Instead of it feeling like a con and it's just a game, it becomes, oh my gosh, what a cool game. And so the game of life starts to become fun again because you can play it as a game, which means you can play it full out and you can play it fearless.
Almost like the cheat sheet.
It's exactly like the cheat sheet. It's like I can play, I can tell you, like I suspect if I'm ever in a position where I'm really given a gun and told to defend myself or my family against a real threat, I don't think it's going to go well. But you put me behind a PlayStation and a Call of Duty game, and I am just kick-ass, right? Well, it's like real life becomes the game because you see it for what it is. You see it as a creation of the mind, and instead of that being a problem and something that leads to a lot of thinking, that leads to a lot of feelings of emptiness and nihilism and pointlessness, you suddenly realize, oh my God, I wake up again tomorrow and I get to make up a new game. And I wake up again the next day and I get to make up a new game. And if I like the game, I can keep playing it. If I don't want to play it, I can make up a new game.
Beautiful. Yeah, but it's getting the other players to play along.
Yeah, but that, you see, that's part of the fun of the game is finding other people who are waking up with you. Because as you play, you'll notice that while a lot of people don't see it for what it is,
right,
a lot of people do. And that's when you catch the twinkle in someone else's eye. And you can be in the midst of a negotiation. You can be in the midst of an argument. You can be in the midst of a, I don't know if Salt Lake City has deli, but I was thinking like a deli in New York City, you know, and you just catch someone's eye and you both know.
Beautiful. Yeah. But just as you said, I'm living here in Salt Lake City where we have a predominant religion and there's a lot of, you know, those dogmas that are so ingrained that, I mean, I've had friendship family members that have just fallen away mm-hmm. ever since my experience. Because I don't hold those same beliefs. And that's where I think I'm struggling with most right now is, you know, being able to balance, you know, what I do know and then what is, I guess, acceptable.
Well, so that's your game right now.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Your game is to not try and remember what you experienced, but to look in that direction and see what you can see from here.
Mm-hmm.
You'll never lose the memory completely.
Right.
But you get to see more and more of it in the moment. You've been to the mountaintop. Now you get to go back to climbing the mountain, but it's easier because you know what's waiting for you.
Okay. That's difficult, though. Easier said than done, I think, sometimes.
Well, I guess I guess I'm going to actually go against you on that. I'm going to say it's easier done than said.
Okay.
It's easier to do than to think about. Because when you think about it, you think about, oh, God, and then how am I going to deal with this situation? And then how am I going to deal with this situation? And what if this comes up? And how am I going to deal with that? And that's exhausting.
True.
But when you just show up in the moment, when you just show up and respond to what shows up, inside and out, it's amazing because something always shows up from that infinite potential.
Beautiful. Yes. And it's just changing your focus. Right.
It's just waking up even more to the fact that what you saw is always present. It's just obscured by a world of thought.
Yeah, that's so true.
Happy exploring, Mary.
Thank you. Beautifully said.
Thank you. You know, it's... I'm trying to think how I would say this. A lot of you will have read Anita Morjani's book, Dying to Be Me. And she does the most beautiful exploration that I've ever heard of a near-death experience. And I've been fortunate enough to spend a little bit of time with Anita. And just, you know, it is absolutely who she is. And what she saw is what she saw. What's kind of cool to me is that without having had that experience, and I know a lot of us haven't had that experience of that you can see the same thing. You can see that there is a deeper dimension of life on offer, and it's on offer right here, and it's on offer right now, and it is always available, and it is what allows us to be in the world, and not to coin a phrase here, but to be in the world but not of it, to be in the game but not lost in the game. To enjoy the movie, but by the same token, to be able to come out of the movie and to be able to live your life. Let's go out to Oregon and let's talk with Carrie. Carrie, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Hi, Michael. Thank you for taking my call. I love you.
Oh, well.
That's the first thing.
There we go. Okay, let's get that out of the way.
Let's get those affirmations out of the way. I love you. No, I wanted to ask you on the inside out, you know, being happy and choosing happiness, more on the daily, if people around you are kind of not on the same wavelength and you live with them or you work with them or you see them a lot, and how do you stay centered if somebody's not on the same plane, like if someone's complaining, and it makes me feel like I'm being dismissive or a Pollyanna because I'm trying to find the way for them to be in a better state.
So this is going to sound like an insane question, but but I actually think it's the only sane question, which is how could somebody else possibly impact my happiness?
I guess I get frustrated. I guess it's frustration because if somebody says, oh, it's raining again, or oh, traffic, terrible. I guess maybe I don't know what to say, therefore I just get frustrated because I want to look at the best side of it, but they might
not. Okay, so I think I'm hearing you, Carrie. So I think we mean different things when we talk about choosing happiness.
Yeah.
I actually don't talk about choosing happiness, but I know what you mean. There is, see, if happiness were created by thought, which in one sense it is, then we would want to think happy thoughts so that we could feel happy feelings. And if somebody else was thinking unhappy thoughts, that might influence our thoughts. And then we would think unhappy, and we get into this battle of mind control within us and with others. Now, what I'm actually saying is two things, and we'll see if we can distinguish them in a way that's useful. One is, underneath your thinking of happiness or sadness, there is a peace of mind and a quiet of mind that is unchangeable, that is ever present, that is the space within which the happy thoughts and the unhappy thoughts arise. Then there are the happy thoughts and the unhappy thoughts and the feelings that come with them.
Right.
So at the level of my thinking, then it really matters what I think. And it really matters what other people think, because it feels like their thinking can influence my thinking. And we get up into the mind control game. When I start to see that there is a world of deeper feeling that is unaffected by the ever-changing swirl of thought in my mind and in other people's minds, then suddenly what you have instead of mind control is freedom of mind. Suddenly it doesn't matter what somebody else is thinking, and it doesn't even matter what you're thinking, because your thoughts will change and their thoughts will change. And you're resting as the sky within which all these clouds keep changing form. Now, that's pretty abstract, so you tell me what you hear in that.
No, I would love that. I think that that's absolutely the goal. And then, and then you wake up. You know, then you wake up for the day and you get into the tactical things. Like, I feel like I start out the day pretty centered, you know, do a lot of personal development, a lot of meditation, exercise, you know, take good care of myself, but then I can get drugged down.
Okay. So this is great, Carrie. If you know, you tell me when I've gone too far. Okay.
Sure. No, go ahead.
So here's what you're up against is you think you've got to create it. You think this is a good idea. You think this is a positive philosophy. And I am saying this is the truth about life. I am not saying you can choose happiness. I'm saying well-being is your nature, whether you think you're happy or not.
Right.
It would be like my saying you've got a nose, whether you think you have a nose or not, and whether you think other people can affect the existence of your nose or not. Your nose will never go away. All that can happen is you become unaware of it temporarily while you're worrying about what other people are saying about your nose.
So I'm going to challenge you, Michael.
Ha-ha. It's okay because you love me, so I'll be fine.
I love you and I'll challenge you. Okay, so that's great. And I want that. I see that. I want that. I feel that. I kind of know that. But it's like, at what level can you put that? How do you get there?
But that's like asking me, how do I get to the point where I have a nose? No.
You already have a nose.
You just keep forgetting that you've got a nose because you think you've got to do stuff to feel your nose. How do you feel your nose? I don't know. Right? But
so
I can tell you, you've got one.
How do I remember I have a nose?
Well, maybe what would help is if you took some time off from trying to make sure that your essential nose hood gets shaken.
Okay.
Right? Like all these things that we do to try and preserve our nose.
Yeah.
To make sure other people can't make us lose our nose. Right? Yeah. All of that reinforces the illusion that it's not already who we are.
Right.
So here's the funny question. It's like the reason that you're not more aware that you have a nose is because of all the things you're doing to convince yourself you have a nose. And you're asking me for more things to do to convince yourself you have
right.
a nose.
Right. Oh, I know. I'm a fixer. I'm a doer. I definitely like a plan. And I understand that. I hear that.
Yeah.
I hear that.
So here would be my plan is rather than either argue with me or agree with me.
Yeah.
Take a look this week at, like, abandon hope for a week. You know what I mean? It's like just give up on doing something to get there. And
yeah.
See what you see. See what's just there when you stop trying.
Yeah.
And I will tell you, for what it's worth, you got to see it for yourself. There's no point in believing me. But I will tell you that what you see when you stop trying so hard is that it's already there. And then
right.
when other people behave the way they behave, they're just behaving the way they behave. It's nothing to do with you.
Then you're not connected.
Then you're not as connected to it. Yeah. Yeah, and some days you get caught up in your own frustrated thinking about what they're thinking, and some days you don't.
Right. I love that. It seems very passive to me, I guess just because I'm used to doing.
Well, and I think that the whole, I get that. Like I, in some ways, I found myself getting very frustrated with people telling me it's already there. But by the same token, it's already there.
Yeah.
It's not really. It's not really passive. That. It's just there's actually nothing to do.
There's nothing to do.
It's not okay, I'm going to try doing passive now.
Right.
It's like my ass is already in my chair. There is literally nothing I could do to get my ass stuck more firmly on my chair than it is right now.
So more of becoming the witness.
No, God. Oh, God, no. No, because that you have to do.
Oh. Again, right? I'm back to doing.
Right. Like, as it happens, like, I don't know, are you sitting or standing?
Standing.
Okay. So your feet are on the ground, right?
Yes.
Now, your feet are on the ground when you're witnessing it, and your feet are on the ground when you're not.
Right.
My ass is in my chair, whether I'm thinking about it or not. It's just
so you don't have
true.
To do anything. Yeah.
What am I supposed to do? Like, could your feet be more on the floor?
Nope. They right. certainly
could. Nor could my ass be more firmly stuck in this chair.
Yeah.
And that's why what we're looking for is what's true, not a technique to create a feeling.
Yeah.
And it just so happens that what's true about human beings is so beautiful, is so gorgeous, is so everything that we want, that it's kind of hysterically funny how hard we work to get it and how far away from it that takes us.
Yes.
So you get a week off and forced leave, and then you get to check back in and either rail against me or go, oh, bloody hell, he was right.
I'll put it on your Facebook.
All right. There you go, Carrie.
Thank you, Michael. Love your work.
Thank you very much. And I mean, it's so fundamentally different because we're so used to thinking it's a belief, it's a technique, it's a this, it's a that. If I don't A, then B won't happen. And honest to goodness, it's so much simpler than that. You are the infinite creative potential. You are the infinite creative potential of the entire universe. You are pure potential. You are the space within which thoughts arise, the space within which experience arises. There is a feeling to who you are. There is a feeling to the space within. It is a feeling that most people describe as peace, as contentment, as joy, as rapture, as bliss, as quiet, as spaciousness. And then within that space, you have the power to think. And as thoughts arise, our consciousness creates an experience for us. It creates a feeling that comes with the thought. And if we see it for what it is, it's an ever-changing kaleidoscope. But when we start to think that what we see is something outside of us, that it's happening to us or coming at us, as opposed to coming from us and then reflected back, then it really does look like there's a lot to do. But I promise you, however little it looks like there is to do, there's even less to do. Let's go to Toronto. Let's talk to, okay, am I going to get this right? Tamara or Tamara? Let's go with Tamara.
Tamara.
Ah, Tamara. Yeah, well, all right. I'll give myself one out of three. What's
on
your mind today, Tamara? What are we going to talk about?
I'm trying to get my work out into the world to help people share their gifts with the world. But the more I'm trying to do that, I'm having trouble being, I'm having trouble succeeding in doing that. I'm running into blocks and just finding the seas aren't parting. It's been 4 years, and there'll be a bit of positive momentum happening, and then it crashes. And it's
okay,
like,
so what do you do?
I'm a career counselor, I'm a life coach, and I'm intuitive.
Okay, and so whose life have you touched in the last 2 weeks?
All my friends, all my family, people I talk to every day on the phone.
Okay. So do you like charging friends and family?
No.
No, I don't either. So who are the people you talk to on the phone?
Some clients, not as many as I would like, but whether it be a service person at a desk. I was speaking to somebody at Google today, and I was helping the person I was talking to at Google. Just finding out his background and what his purpose is. And yeah, he was happier at the end, but I'm not, business-wise, it's not happening.
Okay, so the reason I'm asking you these questions is because there, in my experience, I'm going to say 8 times out of 10, I'm making that statistic up, right? But 8 times out of 10, when someone's business isn't taking off in the way they think it should or that they would like it to, it's to do with either overestimating or underestimating, overestimating or undervaluing the impact that they're having on people. So,
okay. So
that's just a rule of thumb. I mean, that's not a truth, but that's what I see. Is either people say, but my work is great, but if I actually talk to the people they worked with, they go, yeah, it was all right. Or, and it does happen the other way too, the 2 out of 10 is people go, I don't know why she's not on Oprah, because honest to God, every time somebody walks into the room with them, they come out transformed. Now, I'm not going to say you're at either of those extremes, but which one do you think it's more likely to be?
The second.
Okay. So,
I think one of my blocks is that I want to get my work out to the world, but I'm not comfortable with video. I'm not comfortable talking. I actually had the opportunity to partner with a great person and do a retreat alongside him.
Okay, I'm going to ask you something really stupid tomorrow, but who cares?
Okay.
Like, who cares whether you're comfortable or not? If you want to get your work out into the world, why would your comfort be a problem?
I feel like I'm just sending mixed messages to the universe. I don't know.
Well, but okay, let me get a little less grandiose.
Okay?
Because I don't know about the universe, but right. I know about comfort. Right. And I know with most things that people are unfamiliar with, they're uncomfortable with them until they get more familiar with them, and then they get more comfortable with them.
Okay.
So like if I want to hit a baseball, I'm going to be really uncomfortable the first few times I stand in and the guy's pitching 90 miles an hour at me. And then if I keep at it, I'll probably get more comfortable. But so like, in other words, if you want to get your message out into the world, and you think video is a good way to do it, it would seem to me that you'd probably want to try making some videos. You wouldn't have to put them up if you didn't like them. But it would seem to me that you would make them to see. And that probably if you did more of them, you'd start getting more comfortable. You'd find things that you liked. You'd find a way of talking about it that came across better. You'd get feedback. Like, in other words, if it wasn't about you, like if your job was, hey, get this message out into the world, and that was just what you got paid for, and like most people, some days you liked your job, some days you didn't, do you think you would do your job?
Yes.
Okay. So that's the shift. Do your job. Don't let it be about tomorrow having a good experience. You'll have a fine experience. The truth is, once you're in it, once you're doing it, you'll have good days and bad days, like we all do. You'll have days where you feel like, oh my God, I am so on purpose, and days where you feel like, oh my God, I am a fraud. But if you keep showing up and you keep doing what occurs to you to do, you keep stepping into the possibilities that present themselves, you're going to get somewhere. It may be way further than you can imagine. It may not be quite as far as you think you'd like, because we're not in control of that bit of it. But you sure as heck can show up every day and just step into the possibilities as they arise. Now, tell me why I'm wrong.
You're not.
Okay. I didn't think I was really, but I wanted to give you a fair shake.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Tamara.
Wonderful. Thanks.
You know, the reason that, and I don't know if that sounded in any way harsh to anyone, but I promise you it was not intended that way, nor do I think it probably was received that way. The truth is, sometimes we just get caught up in a lot of noise in our head. And we start thinking it's about the universe. We start thinking it's about cosmic blocks. We start thinking it's about deep-seated beliefs. When in fact, it's just about getting over the hump. It's like I used to talk about sticks floating down the river that get stuck, right? If a stick is floating down a river, down a stream, and it gets stuck, it doesn't need years of therapy. It needs a gentle nudge back into the flow. When we get stuck and we get caught up and we stop moving, we don't usually need to resolve deep standing issues. We usually just need a nudge back into the flow of our own thinking, back into the flow of our own creativity, back into the flow of life. And then that will carry us along till the next time we get caught up and the next time we lose our bearings. And then something else will jostle us, and it will occur to us to phone into a radio show, or it will occur to us to pick up a book, or it will occur to us to listen to a talk, or we'll be driving behind a beer truck, and the slogan on the back of the beer truck will be like, oh yeah, that's what I need to do. Actually, I don't know what beer specifically would, like Pabst Blue Ribbon, the champagne of beers. I'm thinking more like a Nike truck, you know, like just do it. But I just went with the whole beer thing. Let me talk a little bit about infinite potential, infinite possibilities. I've got a program beginning next week called Infinite Potential, Infinite Possibilities. You can read about it at michaelneal.org/infinite. And it's a small mastermind mentoring group. And I'm taking a group of, I think we're going to wind up with about 8 to 10 of us. And we're going to spend 6 months exploring life from this place. What is it to live from that point zero? To get so familiar with the unknown, so comfortable in the unknown, that instead of feeling frightened of the blank page, we can't wait for the blank page. What is it to start to see possibilities and opportunities all around us and to step into them? And what gets created, what could get created through you when you spend more time in that place of infinite potential, when you wake up to the infinite creative potential of your nature, and from that place you begin to step out into the infinite possibilities of your life. So that's one of the higher end groups, but if you're interested in joining us in LA for that, the URL for that is michaelneal.org/infinite. I'm going to take a very quick call from Israel. Isabel, welcome to the show. Give me a quick question and I'll try and give you a quick answer back.
Thank you very much, Michael. Okay, I've been listening to Abraham Hicks, Esther Hicks, for years. I understand the concept that we create our reality, but I think in the principles, you're going to another level, and I'm just not seeing what that level is. I can see it's there, but I don't know what it is. So can you speak to how the principles differ from Esther Hicks' teachings?
Okay, so I'm going to thank you for the question. I'm going to give you my 1 minute best answer, and we'll see how I do. So, the teachings of Abraham and Esther Hicks, Jerry Hicks, as I read them, and I'm not by no means an expert in these teachings, so my apologies to anyone who thinks that in my summation of them I'm inaccurate or in any way limiting them. I'm sure I am, but they point to how the form of life is created by our thoughts. And what I am pointing to in the Inside Out Understanding, what those of us who teach the field sort of loosely known as the three principles are pointing to, is that our experience of reality is 100% created by thought. So we're not really saying you're creating that table with your thinking, but for all intents and purposes, you're reacting to a table that you've made up in your head. And so we can talk about something. It's easier to see with something like health. There is no such thing as health. You can't put it in a wheelbarrow. And yet we have an experience of health that can infiltrate our entire lives. Money. You can put money in a wheelbarrow, but you can't put your conception of money in a wheelbarrow. And that's what's created by thought. There's my minute. Thank you for joining us. We're going to be back with a brand new show next week. Until then, have fun, learn heaps, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye for now.